Welcome to episode 2 of Message from Mom, where we are breaking down the myths that daughters-in-law don't get along with their mothers-in-law. And today I am joined by two of my daughters-in-law. So I have Kelly Jalali to my left.
Hi, I'm Kelly. I am married to Alex, Beth's oldest, and we've been married for going on 5 years.
And my daughter-in-law, Chelsea, to my right.
Hi, I'm Chelsea, and I have been married to Andrew, Beth's middle child, for going on 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
4 weeks.
We're almost 4 weeks, yeah.
4 weeks, all right, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, cheers, ladies, to relationships.
And family.
And family. Yes, cheers.
Cheers.
You don't necessarily need to be related by blood to really love each other. And today, our topic is dinner parties.
It's a great topic.
Right?
Really is.
I love a good dinner party.
Okay. Is it a dying art?
Well,
is it passé?
I think that's what we need to get into, because I think in our modern times, COVID notwithstanding, I think the question of dinner parties as a dying art or a passé thing, I think is a question for right now, actually. And personally, I love a good dinner party, and I hope they never go away because it's one of my favorite things ever.
I'm with you. But I do have a feeling that, I mean, I'm single now, so I'm not throwing dinner parties on the regular. But I will say I love to have, even if it's one of my friends that comes over or hosting a girls' night out, something like that. I love to do that because I think bringing people together and having that community, I think it's so important for us to have.
I agree. But let's break that down, actually, because maybe we need to redefine what a dinner party is. Because does it have to be,
I know,
eight people? Can it or be even one person?
I mean, is it a party? Is it, does it involve dinner? You know, like, is it appetizer?
Right. So I will just go back. I'll go back in the day because I was married for 35 years before my husband passed away. So we did host a number of dinner parties. And it was a very fun way to get to know people. So you didn't perhaps know the people that you were inviting all that well. But it was also a great opportunity to do it. And also back in the day, too, they had the like movable feasts where your neighborhood, like maybe 10 couples participated in so this house had the appetizer, so there are the fondues were really very, very fun. But when I was first married in the 80s, there were two things that I loved to do. A fondue was really, really big at that time, from the, you know, from the 70s on into the 80s, and that was such an easy way to invite people over, and it kept you busy because you actually had an activity, something to do, and the conversation would flow very naturally. So that was a very, very fun, easy way. And I wasn't necessarily the best cook when I was maybe ever, according to revisionist history. But
fondue is easy enough.
but as as we moved on and into our marriage, I loved to throw dinner parties and Mac did too. He was in the hospitality industry. So hospitality was really just second nature to him. Right. And as I said, it was an easy way, and we moved a lot. So when we were newer to a community, you know, to find those people to invite to our home. So I love them. I think that, and someone once said, and it might've been Ina Garten, who I love. I mean, she's my guru. I
love Ina Garten.
Oh my gosh. For recipes and hosting dinner parties. But I believe it was Ina that said you should have no more than 8 people, but 6 is really the perfect number.
Interesting.
For a dinner party.
I do agree with that because the last dinner party that I hosted with Andrew, I think we ended up having 9 people. Our table in our dining, like our formal dining section, is not big enough. We need to get a bigger table. which we didn't quite realize when we initially moved into our house because it worked in our townhouse. But we didn't have enough seats. So I had to pull chairs from our breakfast table in, and we were all squished together. Which that could just be a table situation. But you know, I do think had we had 6 people, it would have been a lot better.
Yeah. Well, I think there's something intimate and sweet about being in close quarters at a too small table. For a dinner party.
That's true.
So I think let's maybe consider why and how the dinner party has changed over the decades. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think for me, growing up in the 80s, I was watching reruns of television from shows, you know, in the 60s and 70s. And dinner parties, you know, I'm thinking of like Bewitched in particular, mm-hmm. because I can recall those very clearly, where mm-hmm. she was always throwing a dinner party for her husband's advertising, you know, colleagues mm-hmm. and maybe clients that would come to the house. And so there was always some like sitcom comedy gem about, you know, what was going on in the kitchen or whatever. But I think mm-hmm. growing up at that certain period of time, the idea of dinner parties, and as you said, you gave a lot of them in the 80s, mm-hmm. was very different than now. And I mm-hmm. do think that there's something really, and actually fondue goes back to this, mm-hmm. if I think about it, because I think the evolution of dinner party has become more of a grazing thing. So it's almost like the movable feast, but you're not mm-hmm. actually leaving someone's house. Mm-hmm. And then you have the activity of grazing, which is similar to fondue mm-hmm. Parties. Mm-hmm. So while you might not all be sitting at a table with, you know, fine dining ware and whatever else you might have, you know, to set the table, the fact that everybody is going to congregate around an island or a table that has, you know, that's heaping with appetizers and fun things to graze on, conversations are started, people are hanging out there, they're talking about the food, they're getting to know each other. So I think the evolution of dinner parties where you sit down, mm-hmm. like we're used to from the 80s,
has changed. Has
really changed this kind of new sort of idea where you're grazing.
More interactive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can walk around and talk to different people without feeling like you're getting up from your seat at the table to have a conversation with someone else or talking across the table.
Right.
And I love mm-hmm. graze eating. Like it's one of my mm-hmm. favorite ways to eat. Mm-hmm. If I could graze for dinner, that would be like the best thing ever every night.
Right.
But
well, all the boards. And that really does come into
the charcuterie, cheese and dessert boards. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it also doesn't limit you to, I feel like if you are hosting a dinner party and you're seated next to someone, then sometimes you feel like you're limited just to talk to the person to your left or right.
Yeah.
Or if it's a bigger party,
right.
Whereas, you know, if it's more of a grazing, right. you can talk to everyone.
It's much more egalitarian, right? So like we have, and you've seen Downton Abbey. I don't know that you watched Downton Abbey, but
I watched that. Well, okay. I've watched it.
You've tried.
I've tried. I did try it. And I did watch the movie.
Yeah.
But you know what I did watch was,
Gilded Age.
Gilded Age.
Similar.
Similar. It's we're talking about a slightly different time period. Yes. Not that different, but it goes without saying that the idea of what I'm about to say like translates over the decades, you know, during that time period where they're having these dinners with, you know, 8, 10, 12, 16, like huge mm-hmm. numbers
like
of people.
Huge parties, yeah.
Right? And so there's this etiquette of where for a certain period of time, and this is dictated by the host or hostess, mm-hmm. that and maybe it wasn't, maybe this was just, it was carved in stone, but for a certain part of the dinner, usually from the beginning to the midpoint to like, maybe it changed with each, and maybe you know more about this than I do, but, for a certain period of time, you only talk to the person to your right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then you switch.
You switch and you talk to the person to your left, right? Mm-hmm. So where someone sat at a table was super
important. Very important. And it was always the hostess because you had the name cards, or not the name cards, but the place cards.
Yes.
So the hostess, it was like a wedding. Mm-hmm. The dinner parties were planned exactly like that. And so they decided who they thought would be able to converse
with each other.
They wanted to meet.
Who they wanted,
Gilded Age does a great job in the last season with this, where the one lady who had been the servant that, or the lady's maid that then marries the rich guy, and she wants to sit next to the the royal
the
whoever was in town. Yes.
So I mean that and that kind of prescribed dinner party clearly went out of style a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So you know, fast forward and we're in the 80s, but you're still as a hostess wanting to create an environment where your guests are seated next to who you think they're going to hit it off
with.
They don't already know each other, right?
Exactly.
But I think today now, the idea of having a dinner party, and this is why the appetizer thing, having boards is like so great, is that you want everybody to meet and love everyone else, right? Because maybe you're introducing two separate friend groups, like when you get married, or when you're just dating someone and you buy a house together, or whatever stage you're at, like you're maybe bringing two friend groups together and you want those people to know, be able, so you don't necessarily want to have this prescribed sort of seating situation.
Yeah.
I think that, evolution, I mean, maybe it comes from.
And I don't know. I mean, so growing up, cause I grew up in the 90s, you know, my childhood, I don't remember my parents really ever having a lot of dinner parties, if I'm going to be honest. And I don't know if that was more on them or their jobs, you know, like maybe their jobs didn't prescribe them to like throw lavish dinner parties. But I don't know. I mean, did you and Mac have a lot of dinner parties?
We did early and definitely earlier in our married life as well. And when we, when we lived in Houston, that was the, like the longest place that we'd lived anywhere.
Yeah.
So we lived there close to 6 years. And so we really did build up a very lovely friend base. And then as far as work, he would also bring work people and we would entertain that way. And it still was in favor, you know, where we sat down at the dinner table. And so I was very thoughtful of
Who sat. Yeah.
We invited and, you know, what, and then also what I planned as far as the meal, because that was also very important too. I always pick something fairly easy. Lasagna was always my go-to because that was very, very popular. I mean, I think it still is. I don't think it ever
not the frozen favorites lasagna.
No, I mean, I did it. My mom
is always a thing. It's always really in style.
Yes,
it really is.
It is always in style.
So I would do lasagna because you can make it ahead of time. So there's a lot of prep work that goes into it beforehand. But then when my guests arrived, I could actually
enjoy it.
I'm with them and not have to worry about, you know, stirring the pot on this or the timer for this. So yeah, so you pop the lasagna in and then Caesar salad with anchovies and a, you know, coddled egg. And then I, and then I always did a lemon meringue pie. So that was like my go-to.
Yeah.
And even years gone by. So one, this is before you met Andrew, he was still living in New York, Chelsea, but I was in New York over Valentine's Day. So we had a Valentine's dinner party for his. So I did a mushroom, or it was a vegetarian lasagna, but you know,
oh, really?
So we had, and his roommate Pete made the Caesar salad and we did some garlic bread. And I think I just got, you know,
I've heard about Pete's Caesar salad.
I think they all have. Yeah.
Pretty
apparently good. Legendary.
Yes. But I was very thoughtful about making, making dinner very, very easy so I could spend time with my guests.
Yeah.
And then when we sat down, there was really just a nice cadence to everything. And I was also very big, and we still do this just at, like at Christmas, having a game at the very end.
You know,
So then you're doing
together.
Right.
Charades was used to be very big. Pictionary was really
Oh, I remember when huge. Pictionary came
that out. Was, so that was always a fun game where you invited, we usually did the, you know, the men versus the women. Teams like that, or trivia was also really, really big.
Yeah, Trivial Pursuit's a great group game. I have to ask, did you, since Mac was in the hospitality industry and you guys were moving and making friends and everything, did you ever entertain his colleagues from the hotel?
We did.
Yeah, so how, was there a difference between how you would throw a dinner party for your friends in the neighborhood and then his colleagues from the hotel?
Yes, it was always much more formal with his colleagues. And sticking to protocol where dinner parties with our friends was a little bit more casual.
So did you change your menu when you for, so like, what would you make for colleagues?
Would you cater?
Wow.
Would you cook?
Very good. Very good. Ding, ding, ding. You go to the head of the class.
Hi.
Go to the head of the class, Chelsea. So I we would cater it.
Yeah.
We would cater it. So
you,
then
you don't want to leave anything to chance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so then it would be delivered. And then, and there were a couple of dinner parties. I even remember them where we hired people and then they actually served us. So I didn't have to do anything, you know, so I basically got to like Downton Abbey or Gilded Age. I mean, I got to sit down and really enjoy everything. We, one time we even hired like a little mini orchestra.
Oh my God.
We lived in Houston and we had a pool in the backyard. So it was a backyard by the pool and a little orchestra. It was a lovely evening.
Oh, wow.
So it was a lot of fun.
That is way beyond any
dinner
party that I've ever had. Yeah. I always think, so I haven't thrown many dinner parties because we just bought our house. I guess it's been maybe a year and a half now. But we've thrown a few and then we threw a Halloween party. But I feel like every time I throw a dinner party, and I don't know if you have any kind of tips to you know, overcome this. There's something about me where I feel like I need everyone to be having a good time and everyone to be, you know, having a conversation with someone. And I get this anxiety of, oh, is everyone having a good time? You know,
any hostess feels that way when you have a party. Yeah,
You do, because you don't want your party to be the dud party, because we've all been to a dud party. I mean, let's face it. We've all.
Oh, yeah.
And then you and all your friends are talking.
They talk about it. Hey,
well, Andrew and Pete have the funniest story, and I always say,
"Oh, do they?
Remember when they were in San Francisco and they ditched Mac and I and Christian to go to this party?
Oh,
and
really?
It was a dud party, and ended up being the worst party they ever went to.
Oh, I don't remember that story.
I was like,
sorry that they ditched you.
They were very sorry, and I was like, karma is a bitch, because you ditched us. We were fun. We were having a lot of fun, but you thought that was going to be a better party. So, and it wasn't a better party. But we've all been to those parties.
Sure.
But I don't want any of my parties to be like that.
No, but I think a lot of it has to be like planning,
yes,
prepping, and then mingling.
It has to do with the guest list, really. I mean,
I do think the guest list definitely. I mean, because you, like you said, you have to have people that know each other at least somewhat, even if everyone doesn't know each other.
Yeah,
or that you feel are gonna vibe with each other.
Exactly.
I think that's the thing, is like knowing, even if people don't know each other, just knowing enough about your friends or acquaintances that you would be able to say, oh, you and that person have something in common. Okay. That's a good matchup. But at least as long as you have a few of those.
Yes.
And then you've got a few other people that know each other maybe and can kind of ease it all together. I don't know. I'm sorry to say, but I haven't been to a dinner party that wasn't all about just having family in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm worried maybe that this is probably a COVID thing also, because, you know, we moved to Athens and then COVID happened. Mm-hmm. We moved here in August and then COVID happened.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, we were doing a home renovation. And so we were living in an apartment. I clearly wasn't having any dinner parties at my apartment.
Right.
But I think, I think it is something that I do actually miss from living in a more metropolitan area where I met people with more frequency, strangers, not necessarily family. And but I do love a good dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have to say, though, that some of my favorite dinner parties that I've thrown have been family get-togethers.
Mm-hmm. Family events.
Which we do. We always we do that actually fairly regularly.
We do.
And I really do like that.
Yeah. I think the first Thanksgiving that we had in Athens was, I think we had 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was great.
People. It was huge. And it involved our neighbors and it involved our friends that we had met.
Yeah.
So we had this great mix of like new friends, neighbors, family, had family come in from California.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a really wonderful, and I actually set the table. So we actually, you know, we had, it wasn't just kind of a,
wasn't the grazing.
It wasn't the grazing.
It wasn't the boards and you can wander around.
Exactly.
And things like
that. We had a set table and everything. Mm-hmm. And honestly,
there is something nice about having a set table.
There is.
Like doing a formal.
I do too. Especially, I think, when people aren't expecting it. I think that has kind of become something that I really like. I like the idea, let come over for brunch and you think it's going to be a casual thing. However, it's like
it's
set up and there's flowers and it's, you know, it's special.
Well, I have a, I have a friend that I met recently. She's a new friend. And I met her through my Pure Barre Pilates classes.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a great way to meet people.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. She, but we've gone to coffee together like two separate times. And she posts all the time about she'll host friends over and she just goes all out on her brunches and her dinner parties and she'll post it on social media.
Yeah.
And so this last time we had coffee, I said, I need to be invited to one of these.
There you go.
And she was like, oh my gosh, I'll invite you the next time.
Yeah.
But she'll post about it. And it's just fabulous because, you know, I mean, she thinks of everything down to just even like little gifts that she'll give them to take home,
so
you know?
Yeah, I like that.
Like a little party favor,
which I think
is so cute.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Well, I think dinner parties really are, it's just, again, your community, being thoughtful about your community, because it really does, it takes you out of just your day-to-day existence. And it's like, okay, let's do something special. Let's do, and you really are thinking about your friends, because you're looking at your friend on social media and you're like, oh, these look like so much fun. I want to be invited, you know? So then the opportunity came and it's just like, I want to be invited. And
I invited myself.
Well, I think that's actually perfectly acceptable in something like that, because sometimes we don't actually stop to think about
who we would put on the guest list, right? Maybe it.
Mm-hmm.
Adding to the guest list.
Right.
You just think of the typical people.
Exactly. Right. And always expanding. And that's what I do think, mm-hmm. especially back in the day, as I said, when we were new, that was actually one thing that I would actively be thinking about. Okay, I need to be expanding my friend base.
Right.
And I also think, too, we need to be thoughtful about that, to always be extending our friend base, because I will tell you, having moved so many times, and when you're the new kid on the block,
it's hard to make friends.
It really is, because everybody's like, well, they have, I can't remember if it's four and no more or whatever it is, as far as your friend base or
keeping it tight. You mean
exactly. They keep it very, very tight. And so they don't have room to include anybody else. And I think that being thoughtful about always expanding your friend group is because you don't know who's new, or like myself, I lost my spouse. I'm in a completely different position than I was, you know, when I was married. So things change, or maybe divorced, or, you know, whatever it is, but to be thoughtful about that. But I think that having that dinner party really harkens back to that time when we were being thoughtful about our friend group and just manners. And it's just really, it's kind of old school, but I mean, everybody is the winner at a dinner party.
No, totally. Well,
except for those people that don't get invited. So
just like next time.
I was going to say, you know, if we think it's perfectly acceptable for someone to invite themselves to a dinner party, by which, you know, obviously not in any kind of crass way, but to say, oh my gosh, you know, I would love to come sometime. Okay, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
What if all your friends have a dinner party and you're the one that's not invited? Has that ever happened to either of you?
Well, I think it is just as you experienced with social media. Now that social media has burst on the scene and we can see what everybody is doing. We didn't necessarily know that we were excluded back in the day.
Right.
Because
unless you hear about it cooler or something.
Or unless, you know, they lived across the street and then everybody's
right.
I mean, that
actually did happen, you know, a couple of times. But then you just realize it's not always.
Can't take it personal.
You cannot take it personal.
Yeah.
You really, really
can't. You can't take it personal. Yeah. I mean, and I don't think this has ever happened to me, but, you know, looking back, I feel like there's probably been dinners, like maybe not a dinner party that I've hosted or someone else has hosted, but dinners where someone, like a group of people, have gone out that maybe I haven't been invited to. And then, you know, like in this day and age of social media, you're going to find out about it.
Yeah.
Right.
And obviously that, you know, kind of hurts your feelings, but I don't know. I feel like we talked about, it's kind of, you just have to let it not get to you.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
You can't take it personally.
Right.
Perhaps, you know, because as a hostess, right, you're planning your dinner party for guests in mind, and you're considerate of who you're inviting and how they're going to get to know each other. And you want to bring friend groups together, or you want to introduce people. Maybe you want to set some a couple up. I mean, it could be a setup, you know, and that it. So there's tons of reasons why you choose who you do to have a dinner party. And so you can never let it get you down personally, right?
Right.
And I don't think, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think anyone, you know, in the back of their head is thinking, I'm not inviting this person.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know,
that's what we tend to think when we haven't been invited. We think it's all about us.
Yeah.
Rather than just placing ourselves in the hostess position, and it has nothing to do with
it. It has nothing.
I mean, it really, really doesn't. Yeah. Yes. So when we take ourselves off the equation, it's a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yes. Well, so I did have a question for you. What do you think, you know, as far as hosting a dinner party, what's the best day? Do you think like a Thursday, a Friday, a Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you think the best day is for everyone to attend?
I always hosted on a Saturday, because as a young married couple, that was the easiest night to get the babysitter.
Mm.
So that was always a big factor, was, you know, when can we have a babysitter? Because even when you're hosting, you really want somebody to be watching over the children, even though
had the babysitter come to you and the kids were still at home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. And then they could like come to, it was kind of old school. I mean, it certainly wasn't Downton Abbey or anything like that, but you know, they're always so curious.
What the adults are doing.
Yeah. You know, so of course, you know, they would come down and say hi. They'd always be in their PJs because I think we typically did dinner parties like 7:30 back in the day.
Yeah.
But it was always on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
Because childcare was involved, and Thursday nights, just maybe it would work in today's world, but back then it just
worked. I don't know. I mean, I think Saturdays are the best, like overall, because people don't have to worry about rushing home from work,
right,
changing clothes, mm-hmm, or dealing with commutes or any of that kind of thing.
Right. And as the hostess too, then you had the whole day to prep.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing worse than feeling rushed. I mean, we've all been there.
Right.
There's nothing worse than, oh my gosh, I have everybody in 30 minutes and, you know, so you're throwing your dirty dishes in the, you know, in the
100%.
Yeah.
You just don't like to be under the gun like that. So Saturdays was always good.
Yeah. I like Saturdays. I think that's a mm-hmm great day. Because your guests have had time to like mm-hmm relax and deal with their day and like have their weekend partially, and then go. Right. Well, let's, I'm curious about hostess gifts. Okay, so I think with the holiday season just behind us, and that's actually really the only time when the idea of hostess gifts really is a topic. Mm-hmm. And I think probably if we're talking about dinner parties, it's a topic all year long. It's not just at Christmas time, but mm-hmm everyone talks about it at that point, right? Mm-hmm. We've got hostess gift lists and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just start with... as a hostess, mm-hmm, what was the best gift you ever got as a hostess gift?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not really I can't really think of anything that really like stood out as far as what a memorable gift was. But you are very conscious of the people that didn't bring a gift.
This is true.
And so it just really harkens back to thoughtfulness.
Yes.
Etiquette. Mm-hmm. And so you are thinking about, oh my gosh, my host has gone to great lengths
to
pull off this dinner party. You should never, ever show up
empty-handed.
Yeah.
My mom always used to say it was a bread and butter gift.
Ah.
So you always had a bread and butter gift mm-hmm to take with you when you went to someone's home.
Yeah.
It was just imperative, and especially my late husband, Mac, and again, in the hospitality industry, and he grew up in Europe, and, you know, manners were just so important. Mm-hmm. So for sure, you always, I mean, the go-to is always, you can stop by the grocery store and pick up a bouquet of flowers.
Or a bottle of wine.
Or a box of chocolate. Those are just no-brainers.
Yeah.
But what I learned through the years is that we always had this drawer. We had a little stash. So when we were, like, traveling, and we found, like, coasters, or when we lived overseas, in Vietnam, we really mm-hmm liked this one particular thing, mm-hmm, you know, from Vietnam that was very indigenous to that country. So we stocked up on that mm-hmm little gift and then would give that, you know. So then we always had this drawer. So I knew, and having that drawer is really nice because you know you're never going to have to stop at the store and get the bottle of wine.
That's actually a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a drawer or like a mm-hmm tote, you know, some kind of storage box or something where you're just kind of collecting mm-hmm things. Cause mm-hmm I think, a bottle of wine is clearly the go-to.
It really is. And it's always, and you're always very,
it's always a safe bet.
It's very thankful.
It's super safe.
Unless someone doesn't drink.
Right.
And then flowers or a candle.
The thing about flowers that is interesting is that I've always understood and read this in like etiquette books that don't ever bring just a bouquet of flowers that aren't already in a vase, because then you're asking your hostess
to do the work
to deal with, like, oh, I've got this bouquet of flowers, now I need to cut the stems and put it in a vase and mm-hmm da da da, right? Because you just don't want to let that sit on your counter or whatever.
That's actually interesting, because I think that
them
there's been some vase times where I've probably just brought a bouquet of flowers,
mm-hmm, yeah,
but you go to Publix now and they already have them
right
in the vase, so that they make it so easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah. Not only
all grocery stores will do that, right? So you can just have it already. Yeah. It's a complete package. They can just set it on the counter or the table, and there's no work for them.
Easy. I will say I do notice a difference. So I feel like me and Andrew have hosted like a housewarming party versus a dinner party. Mm-hmm. And I do think a lot more people bring gifts, quote unquote, to a housewarming party than they would a dinner party. Yes. But I do agree with you. And I think even if you are attending a dinner party, even though it's not maybe a housewarming and it's not a new home or, you know, it's not their first party, I do still think you should bring something because, I mean, they are going to good lengths to spend the money to, you know, not only pay for the dinner, to pay for the alcohol, you know,
the time involved in hosting.
With the time involved.
So all you have to do is show up.
Exactly.
Right. Showing up empty handed is just just spotless.
Not good.
Yeah. Spotless. And I think that that's, we really need to go back to that time where we're actually thinking about the other person.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, I'm just going to, well, maybe I don't even want to go that much rather than thinking, oh my gosh. Maybe I don't want to go, but they put the time and the effort and energy and oh my gosh, that's really a very thoughtful thing to do. So I'm going to be, I'm going to reciprocate that thoughtfulness. And
I think a lot of people do have that feeling of, oh, I don't want to go. Yes. And I like bringing it back into the COVID scenario. I think COVID, and I don't know if it was COVID in general, but I think the being at home and staying at home because of COVID and people getting used to just always being at home. Once everything opened back up, it became a, you know, oh, do I really want to go?
It was like a chore.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
but then it's also an easy out.
And it's just, you know, well, do you really want to just stay at home and be by yourself? Do you want to go and like socialize time?
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe that
and community
into social media and like take it off topic, but people staying at home and just scrolling on their phones.
I know. We're living a vicarious life rather than a life in the moment.
Exactly.
But I will always choose a life in the moment. And then hey, social media is my job.
Yeah.
And you and both 100% of you work with me now.
Yeah.
So there's a
time and a place.
Yeah. Exactly. But nothing will ever replace, you know, face to face.
Right.
And having that community. And as I said, not always, it's not just always about you. It's about other people too.
Right.
And to be mindful about of that. Sure.
You know what I would like to actually see become a trend is instead of having FOMO, fear of missing out, I think people, when they're invited to a thing by someone, they do a hostess gift, right? But I think the competition for the best hostess gift should become a thing, honestly, because a bottle of wine is, yes, it's easy. We can all do it. It's simple. If they don't drink a bouquet of flowers or a bottle of sparkling, you know, cider or something, right?
We can get around that.
But I really like the idea of some weird and quirky. Yeah. And I will also go one further and say, don't get candles as hostess gifts. Y'all, like, you don't know what people's personal preference for scents are in their homes.
That's true.
So
well, also some people don't like candles. Things.
I know.
It's true.
I know.
It's true. Leaving them burning can be dangerous. So I will say that I've gotten some very interesting hostess gifts over time. And I think some of my favorites include things like really cute dish towel sets.
That's very thoughtful.
I think that's very thoughtful, and it is very sweet, and it's practical. These are the kinds of things that I'm like, a bouquet of flowers is beautiful,
right?
But it's going to go away at some point. A bottle of wine, you're probably going to re-gift that the next time you go to a dinner party, right?
No, totally.
A candle, you may never burn it. Probably a re-gifting situation. But things that are
something that you can use are meaningful.
Yeah.
And I feel like, so actually, one of the hosting gifts that I have gotten that I still use to this day, and I love it, was given to me by one of my best friends. And it was an ice, like an ice maker that basically was in the shape of an English bulldog.
Oh, it was an ice
mold. An ice mold. Yeah, sorry. So couldn't come up with that word. And for, you know, everyone that doesn't know, I have an English bulldog. And so
it Asher.
Asher.
It's a very thoughtful and practical gift.
It was so thoughtful. And they're so cute because, you know.
That sounds like an adorable hostess gift. And I do remember when I first met you, when you came to my house, we actually had a little dinner party. It was just the three of us, you, me, and Andrew. And you brought olive oil. Do you remember that? It was a lovely, lovely gesture and very thoughtful. And I really, really did like that. And one of the things that, you know, since I shared that we had that drawer of hostess gifts at the beck and call, one of my go-tos really is a set of coasters.
Yeah.
But not just any coasters. They're linen coasters. So because they absorb, they're easy, they're less expensive than maybe the marble coasters, or they're not as bulky.
You can wash them in the washing machine.
Exactly. Exactly. So yes. So that is definitely my go-to.
Utilitarian hostess gifts are the best.
They really are.
Honestly. And cooking ingredients is a perfect gift.
It really, really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something special that they wouldn't maybe buy for themselves. I think that's the essence of a hostess gift, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So you think we've covered everything about dinner parties? Any other lingering questions?
Well, I will say we could probably talk about this for 5 more hours.
We could. But really could. But
maybe for another day.
Yeah.
Another day.
Another day.
Another day. All right. So stay tuned next week when we will drop another episode of Message from Mom. And you can follow us and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we're also on YouTube and on Instagram. So, okay, ladies, we're going to continue to bust that myth that mothers-in-law aren't necessarily monsters-in-law. And we'll see you next week.